Hi there, it's Tracy Zemiska again, and I'm here with my friend Megan Davis, and I've known her for quite a while. We started teaching at a studio together quite a few years ago, shortly after, I think, I did my teacher training, and we just kind of bonded, and so I've known her since, which is awesome. And welcome, Megan.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for being here. Megan currently teaches right now at Partners to Empowerment Wellness Center in Beechwood and Oasis Yoga in Solon, Ohio. And then she also teaches for an organization that both of us teach at, which is called ZenWorks. And I can put a little bit of a link down there. But she, for those of you in the Northeast Ohio area, she will be teaching the donation-based fundraiser event. What was the date for that?
Yes, it is May 15th. Not May 15th. It is, let me check my calendar. June 25th.
So it's Saturday, June 25th. Awesome. And I will put a link to the Facebook information for that too, but please, you know, if you are interested in doing yoga outside, and Megan's an amazing teacher, it's a great event to help support ZenWorks and the mission of ZenWorks, which is bringing yoga into schools. So take a minute to visit that, and I'll also include Megan's contact information so that if you, you know, if anything she says resonates and you just want to reach out to her and say hello, or if you want to be able to find her and come to her classes, you'll be able to do that. So I have been doing this, as you guys know, and also Megan knows, as a way to try to get more people involved with yoga and just give different perspectives. All of us have different stories and different reasons that we do things. So I would like to have different teachers come on and just talk about their journey and what they've experienced so that it makes yoga a little bit more accessible to everybody. So Megan, if you could look back, I'm not sure how long you've been practicing for, but if you could look back to when you began practicing, like what drew you to yoga? Why did you come to this?
Yeah, you know, I actually started practicing, it was probably like in 2008, so what is that, about 7 years ago. I just kept hearing about yoga and had always kind of been interested, and so I work as a therapist, so I've always been interested in like relaxation and progressive relaxation and using breath work with my clients. So I just kept thinking, like, I have to try yoga. So I went to a beginner's workshop and had all these plans to start taking classes, and then I got pregnant. So I actually started really practicing with prenatal. I had an awesome teacher. So I took prenatal yoga through my whole pregnancy, and it was really pretty huge for me because I had previously been on medication for anxiety since grad school. And so when I got pregnant, obviously I had to stop taking that medication. So for me, it was a huge, huge game changer to be able to find something that could help me stay regulated, you know, getting anxious, and then just obviously like going through all the things that you go through when you're pregnant and through the labor, you know, process. So for me, it was just from that point on, I knew that it was going to be something that was part of my life, you know, from then on.
So the medication that you were on, were you on like an antidepressant, anti-anxiety medicine, a mood stabilizer? What were you originally taking?
I was taking Lexapro, so it was an anti-anxiety, something I used for depression too, and I had been on it for, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years, maybe even longer than that. And then, you know, I also had, I think it's called Ativan, which is like a, you know, like a quick fix, kind of like a Xanax that I would take when I needed it. So, yeah, I was on it for several years.
So what was it like to go off of it? I mean, did you immediately notice a change, or was there just so much going on that you already had felt kind of overwhelmed before going off it?
I stopped taking it probably about 6 months before I actually got pregnant because I was trying to get pregnant. So I kind of weaned off of it slowly, and I was seeing a therapist at the same time who I was working with doing EMDR.
Okay.
So I think that definitely helped, like, ease the transition. And then once I started yoga, I continued with some of that, like, energy medicine work, like some tapping work that I had worked on with my therapist. So, like, that whole process, everything kind of just worked together to keep me, like, sane.
Yeah.
For 9 months. And then I've never gone ever back on any medication since then. And I've been really totally fine.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say, like, as a disclaimer, you know, Megan is a therapist. She's not a psychiatrist or a doctor, and neither am I. So mm-hmm. we certainly mm-hmm. are not, you know, encouraging people to go off medication and, you know, without the guidance of a therapist or a doctor. But I do think it's helpful to know that there are alternatives out there, and there are tools that you can gain. Even if you decide that you want to continue using medication for whatever reason, there are tools that yoga offers to help you just in your everyday life to cope. And I don't want to come across like as anti-medicine. I know it's important for people to stay on them, for sure.
Totally.
But what do you think was the top three tools that you got out of yoga that helped you even today still manage, you know, just the general overwhelm, anxiety, life stuff?
Really, I think it's the breath work, just having it available and having the awareness to notice when I need to use it has been, I mean, the biggest thing. So breath work, and for me, I use a lot of progressive relaxation, which is, you know, you're tensing the muscles as you breathe in a certain muscle group, and then as you breathe out, you're releasing that muscle group, releasing the breath, and you go, you know, either from bottom up or top down through the body. So I use that a lot still for myself. That just helps me, and I use it with clients too when I'm teaching classes, especially when I'm teaching therapeutic classes. And I think probably the third thing for me it's really like going to yoga class for me is like going to church. So it's really been the connection for me with like back to myself, and even just knowing that I was disconnected and to be able to get reconnected and connect to whatever you want to call it, God or the universe or my spirit, you know, people use different terms, but that has been a huge part of yoga for me, and especially as I've, you know, continued it and gone through teacher training, because it was not ever something that I had in my life.
That's awesome.
I don't know if I answered your question. I think I just went off on a tangent.
You did. But. No, you totally did. And I think that's what's important about doing this is that, you know, I have my own experiences with yoga, and I can sit around and talk about how great it is all the time, but not everything I say is going to necessarily resonate with everyone. And I think that, you know, and I'm sure as you know this from working with your own clients, there's things that you say that people just really get, you know. So I think it's mm-hmm. really important for all of us to share our own personal stories and ways that we utilize these tools still, you know. I think that people mm-hmm. sometimes think of yoga teachers as like these fancy people who sit around in yoga pants mm-hmm. all day long and practice inversions. They forget that we have another life, you know, besides being a yoga teacher. So there's a reason that we do this. And then I guess, too, this would kind of, you know, meld into the idea of why did you become a teacher? Like, what encouraged you or mm-hmm. prompted you to become a teacher?
Really, it was – so when I started my teacher training, so – which was in 2012. So really, I haven't been teaching that long. My whole intention was to be able to teach yoga to my students. So I was working as a therapist, a school-based therapist at that time. And I had been in that school for about 5 years, just doing, you know, therapy, anger management, social skills, blah, blah, blah. So I really, my intention was to take these skills back to my students because I had started kind of practicing some of the breath work and some of the poses and things with them, and they responded to it so amazingly that I just thought it would be so awesome to be able to teach them in a real way. So I never had any intention of quitting my job or teaching grown-ups or, you know, being a teacher really other than outside of my work as a counselor. And then once I took teacher training, as most people know, it just kind of changes everything. But that was really, it was just seeing like the difference that it could make with my clients who are just living in these completely chaotic and trauma-filled circumstances. So just to like watch like a 15-year-old kid in my office sit and breathe for 5 minutes and see like kind of this weight lift off their shoulders, or have them say like, you know, I feel really calm, or, you know, it was really watching what it did for them that made me want to go out and really teach more people and teach as many people as I can.
Do you have any like particular stories about some of the kids that you've worked with, like, and how they may have come back to you and said, this and this has happened, and I was able to use yoga, or I'm so glad that I have this tool, or anything like that?
Right. You know, so, I mean, a lot of my school that I was working at was, so a lot of my kids were coming from Euclid and East Cleveland and Cleveland, and even now, like, through ZenWorks, we're in the Cleveland Public Schools. So, unfortunately, a lot of the students can be somewhat transient. And so I don't know that I have a story of anyone who's, like, come back, because it's, like, once you kind of lose that contact,
yeah,
it's kind of gone, you know, like, so for me not working at the school, or for them moving, or they graduate, or, you know, the group ends or whatever. But I definitely, you know, have, like, there's one kid that I always talk about. He was 18 and like really heavily gang involved, and huge pot smoker. Like that was his coping skill, like just really highly traumatized, really hypervigilant. So just always like on guard, and like you could like just see him jumping out of his skin on a daily basis. He probably spent an hour every day in my office, and even though he may not verbalize it, like I, at least my understanding and what I perceived is that he just wanted to be in a place where he felt like he could breathe and kind of let his guard down and not have to, you know, say anything, not have to be anything, but just literally sit there and breathe. And we would do a lot of progressive relaxation. And so this is like a great example, but he would always say like, Miss Davis, man, she'll get you that high feeling. But it was really like, okay, so I'm like, you're not high, you're relaxed. You know, like he was using marijuana to self-medicate, and we would like joke about it, but it was just that education that like, this is, you're in control, you're relaxing your body, your muscles are calm, you know?
Yeah,
so you
for
can,
sure.
You can medicate yourself in another way to help yourself feel better. Like he was one of my, like my favorite kiddos, but like I know, because I saw, you know, how it affected him.
Right. I think that's so awesome, though, that you, there's definitely a lot more people who are in your field in terms of therapy, psychology, psychiatry, that are blending together yoga and therapy. And I think that it's, you know, a really cool way to get people exposed. I do have a client who's a therapist, and she does try to recommend my services to her clients, and a couple of them have called, you know, and had me work with them on occasion. But I always think how great it would be if I was just, you know, a therapist that was able to integrate that. So have you ever thought of, like, opening your own practice where you are seeing people under, like, a therapeutic, you know, a counselor, and integrating yoga into that treatment? Or are you, like, happy where you're at, or...?
I do. Well, I don't know that I'd ever want to open my own practice, just because I'm not business minded, but definitely, like, so for Partners to Empowerment, really most of the classes that I teach for them are, therapeutic classes, in the sense that it is combining kind of that therapeutic background with yoga. So I go into different treatment centers, a lot of drug and alcohol addiction treatment facilities in Cleveland, and then we have one after-school program that we work with through partners that's in East Cleveland. So I am doing that in a way, you know, we're teaching, I'm teaching yoga groups, but incorporating journaling and, you know, self-awareness, affirmations, so that it is, it's not therapy, but it's definitely pulling in like some therapeutic tools in conjunction with the yoga tools, which really are all about self-regulation and self-awareness, which is really what therapy is all about. So it's, you know, mm-hmm. learning how to center and ground and notice your breath and, you know, just find ways to regulate your impulses and your emotions, which is what you teach people in therapy.
Yeah, I think it's really important that, you know, people see the tools that are available. I have volunteered at Recovery Resources, and a lot mm-hmm. of the people who use their services, in addition to having addiction problems, generally most of them have some sort of mental illness, mm-hmm. like underlying, you know, issue or concern. And so, you know, going there, and all I taught was meditation and mindfulness. And I would go once a week mm-hmm. at lunchtime, and I had a small group that I'd work with, and we just did a few gentle stretches and mm-hmm. basically worked mostly on pranayama. And then I would mm-hmm. do a, you know, relaxation technique at the end, whether it was a meditation or it was, mm-hmm. You know, a nidra or whatever the case may be, to give them different tools. And they learned, you know, how to engage with people in different ways as a result of mm-hmm. that. So mm-hmm. I think it's good to, you know, for me, yoga is all about empowerment. Like, everybody has their thing mm-hmm. And what encourages them to teach and stuff too. So, you know, I think that a lot of times we all do the same, but we have our different things too. So if you had, you know, to give advice to somebody new to yoga or that wanted to try yoga and was afraid, what would you tell them?
That's a hard one. I would say that you just have to trust yourself and, you know, be willing to let go of what you think you're supposed to be doing. I mean, even still, as a teacher, you know, like you go into a class, I go into a class mm-hmm. and, you know, there's like a certain feeling of, okay, I'm a teacher, I should be able to do this pose, or the person next to me is doing this, or, you know, like, I mean, even as a teacher, I think it's just human nature that we have comparisons and judgments and expectations. So I think whether you're new or old to yoga, it's just like trusting that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and that you're doing what's right for you. And it doesn't matter what the person next to you is doing. It doesn't matter what it looks like. It matters really how it feels in your body and how you feel when you step off of your mat. I think even that's the one thing I love about teaching in the community with Partners to Empowerment. It's almost like educating them about what yoga is in a way, because a lot of times, like when I walk into these places, you know, I'm this young-ish white girl in yoga pants, and, you know, they look at me sometimes and they're like expecting that I think that, you know, I'm going to say like, okay, we're going to do headstands and we're going to do this and we're going to be happy all the time. And so I love that part about it, that it's educating them that yoga is so personal and it's just kind of breaking some of those stereotypes about what it is and what it can be, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of pervasive stereotypes. And I think that I think it's important, you know, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do the podcast, was because mm-hmm. I do have people say to me, and I've talked about this before in other podcasts, I think, but especially guys, I will be somewhere, like at Dick's or at the grocery store, or mm-hmm. I'll be at like a social gathering, and it will come up that I'm a yoga teacher. And the first thing that guys usually say to me is, well, if they're being inappropriate, they say lots of other things.
Right.
But if they're being normal, the first thing they'll say to me is, oh, I wanted to try yoga, but I'm not flexible. Or mm-hmm. I wanted to try yoga, but I'm afraid that I'll just fart the whole time. Like,
right.
These are their real concerns, you know, and they think that they're not, you know, welcome in a class, or that they can't do it or whatever. So
mm-hmm.
I do think it's important, and I try to encourage people, you know, to try it. Try different people and try different studios and see what you like, and, you know, don't be afraid. Like, everyone there is coming for the same reason, and they just want to feel better, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. There was an awesome quote. I don't know if you follow Catherine Budig, but I don't know exactly what the quote was. It was on Facebook the other day. It said something like perfect handstand but messy life. So, like, that person in your class or that you see on the magazine, like, they have this perfect, beautiful handstand, and they're wearing these awesome leggings and have, you know, a six-pack, but, like, who knows what their life looks like on the other side of that mat.
Right.
So it's just, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah, there's always more than meets the eye. And I think that, I mean, the one thing that I like about being a yoga teacher and doing the things that I do, in terms of, like, the Reiki and the life coaching and all that jazz, I can always be real, you know. And there's sometimes, like, in my last full-time position that I had that was at a nonprofit, if I was having a bad day, I couldn't just shut the door and, like, not talk to people. I still had to interact with them,
mm-hmm.
but there was all these other things competing for my time and my energy when I was at my job. And so if I was in a bad place, like, I had to ignore it, and I had to push it away, and I had to not deal with
mm-hmm.
it. And it took me a lot longer to deal with things because I was constantly trying to avoid them. Whereas as a yoga teacher, like, I have to be real. And some days mm-hmm. that means, like, that I'm going to come to class and I'm not going to be in a great mood. And I'm going to have to just be real on my mat and be okay with the fact that I feel shitty about myself that day, or I'm feeling overwhelmed, or whatever it is. And, you know, so I think that we're really lucky in that we get to be, you know, in our emotional space because of what we do, you know, for our job.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think is so important in my classes, I try to remember to give people permission to feel, like, other than happy. Again, it's like that stereotype that you do yoga and you drink green juice and you're always happy and unicorns and rainbows and sparkles. So it's really important for me to give them that verbal permission that, you know what, after yoga class, you might feel worse. You might feel sad. You might feel angry. Like, something might come up, you know, that it's okay, especially, like, when we journal and process at the end of class. Just that's not bad yoga. That's, you know, that is yoga. It's feeling your feelings and like, working through them and breathing through them and being real about what's going on in your body, in your life. I think it's important to, like, offer that. You don't have to feel happy just because you're doing yoga.
Right.
I mean, hopefully then later, you know, but over time it's then knowing how to get back to feeling content, like coming back to that center.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really, it's amazing in that way. What do you find, like, most inspirational? Like, what inspires your practice? What inspires you to keep coming back to your mat? Like, why do you do that all the time?
I think music. My teacher, Diana D'Antonio, is just a goddess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, music. I get so inspired on my mat when the music connects me to my soul and when I'm moving with the music and my breath. For me, that's huge, and it's hugely influenced, I hope, in my classes, that using music as a way to connect a little bit deeper, and just knowing that I work better in my life when I have yoga in my life. I mean, I notice it in my reaction time. I notice it in how I speak to myself. I notice mm-hmm. it in how I, you know, parent my child, how I interact with my husband. So the more that I have yoga in my life, I'm so thankful that I am aware of how much it impacts, like, every other part of my life. So for me, when I'm, you know, gone for a week without a class or 2 days without doing, you know, breathing at home, I definitely notice it. So that's what keeps me coming back.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I've been asking people, because I think that this is an important kind of thing to deal with yoga. And, you know, nothing is off limits in the world of my podcast. So one of the things that has been coming up a lot lately is the judginess of yoga. I was talking to somebody the other day who's a yoga teacher, and she was talking about a conversation she had had with another yoga teacher. And one of the things that she said to me, which I believe and I have encountered, even myself I get this way, is that yoga teachers are really judgmental. Like for a group of people, for a group of people who, like, are preaching, you know, all this stuff on our mats all the time, we can be mm-hmm. a really judgmental group of individuals. And, you know, one example is just the idea of, like, the commercialization of yoga or, like, yoga fads. People will get really mm-hmm. up in arms, you know, like, mm-hmm. oh, such and such is doing yoga naked now, or such and such is doing yoga with wine afterwards, or whatever, you know. Like, I know mm-hmm. studios who, you know, there's studios who are trying to be stay relevant and to, and you have to, like, for as a business owner, being a business owner is not the same as being a yoga teacher. And mm-hmm. those people who are business owners and yoga teachers, it's difficult because they need to stay true to themselves and their practice and their voice as a teacher, but they also need to make money to keep the doors open. And sometimes that means you have to add bar classes or TRX classes or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, Tabata, whatever it is that you want to do to help get more people in the door. And so I just wanted to ask you, like, have you experienced the judginess of yoga, and do you think that it's an issue? Do you think it's something that us as yoga teachers need to sit down and look in the mirror and say, when am I being judgmental, not just to myself, but to other yoga teachers?
Yeah, I've probably honestly been on both sides of the fence, just as a human, you know, like you see something that comes across Facebook and you're like, okay, well, I do that. Why are they doing that? Or, you know, so it's, but then, yeah, certainly, it's funny, like, some of the places that I've worked or taught, as people or places have gone through transitions, I definitely have seen that and felt that, that issue of, like, well, is this real yoga, or is this, you know, whatever, like you said, adding in other stuff and like, taking it away from what is, like, real yoga. I'm working on this, I feel like, every day. Just, I feel like if your motivation is coming from a place of, you know, purity and love, and your motivation for doing what you're doing is, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, like, that's kind of what it comes down to. Like, if your motivation is purely, like, you know,
like, you want to make money, or...
Well, yeah, and like you said, you have to make money because we live in the world, so you have right. to have money to live in the world. But I think it's like, if your motivation is coming from a place of, like, yes, I need to make a living, but yes, I also believe that this thing that I'm teaching is going to be helpful or resonate with someone or empowering, or, you know, that if the motivation underlying it is coming from a good place, I don't think it can be wrong. I don't think that there's a wrong kind of yoga if it's coming from a loving motivation and if it's safe. You know, I just mm-hmm. feel like people should be able to teach the kind of yoga they want to teach, because there's a zillion people in the world, and they're not all going to want the same kind of class, the same kind of teacher. You know, there's enough people who need healing to go around, unfortunately, in our world. So I feel like it just kind of goes back to, what's your motivation for doing what you're doing? And if you can look in the mirror and feel, you know, comfortable and confident that you're doing what you want to be doing and it's coming from the right place, then I think you should do it.
Yeah,
people
I agree.
Come or they're not going to come.
Yeah, I do think it's really important to, I mean, it was funny because I guess I had thought about this concept before, but I never really explored it in my head or with anybody else verbally. And I had a teacher say something to me about it the other day, one of my friends, and she was like, you know, you should definitely like talk about that at some point. You should talk about what you know, what are the flaws of being a yoga teacher? What do we do? What are we doing to each other?
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah. I was thinking, like, at some point I'd like to get a group of people together to talk about it and do a podcast where there's a whole bunch of us teachers and we just talk about, like, you know, we are not perfect. And I try to remind remind my students of this, you know, because there are people who are looking for a savior or who are looking for a guru. And I have seen teachers create really codependent, unhealthy relationships with their students where they mm-hmm. have propagated this place of fear that the students should only go to their classes or they should
yeah.
only be doing a certain style of yoga or whatever
yeah.
the case may be. You know, like I have heard teachers say things like, vinyasa is not good for you. You should only be doing gentle or whatever the case is. And
mm-hmm.
I think that us as teachers, it is our job to keep people safe. But I don't think that in my mind, and this might be because I'm a woman and because of the way that I grew up, you know, I had a parent who was very verbally and emotionally abusive and let me know all the time the things that I was not capable of doing. And I felt that way as a girl. You know, I grew up in a really traditional town, and I remember being told girls are not good at math and science, and I believed them,
mm-hmm.
you know. And
mm-hmm.
so I do think maybe it's just me having a lot of limiting beliefs around me, but I try to never tell my students ever that they cannot do something. And I
right.
always encourage them to try something new because I want them to grow inside their own bodies and I want them to grow in their practice. And it's important for me, you know, and I'm definitely not perfect and I swear in class and whatever. And, you know, it is definitely not, I mean, my restorative classes and my gentle classes certainly are a place where people can find healing and comfort. But I have people mm-hmm. tell me, even from my vinyasa classes, that even when I feel like I've done my worst, they still tell me I felt really good and I feel healed after this. And so I think
yeah.
it's important for us to just be real with ourselves and, you know, to create a situation where we are not based in fear and we're based in love and we're
yeah.
embracing other yoga teachers with that same love.
Yeah, I think that, like, so I have two thoughts. One is, like, people have free will. Right? So, like, any time that we're persuading or convincing or because of our own fear, really, like, I mean, that's harmful in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people have free will. People can go to places where they feel good and not go to places where they don't want to be. And for us as a teacher to kind of take advantage of that power in a way, I mean, as a teacher, you're in a role of a certain type of, I guess, authority, even though we don't really, I don't think, feel like we have, you know, authority,
mm-hmm.
but you're a teacher, so people will do sometimes what, you know, or they'll ask, what should I do, or where should I go, so I think we really have to respect people's free will, which would be never telling them where they should or shouldn't go, and then, two, I love, like, the things that have been happening in the city, like the teacher's kula.
Mm-hmm.
Like the CLE sit, so where they're going around to studios 52 weeks out of the year, and it's really all, I think, based in that movement of, like, let's bring this community together, we're not in competition with each other, you know, there's enough people to go around, and what if we all work together to, you know, share different types of yoga, different teachers, different styles. You know, just because someone comes to your class doesn't mean they can't go to my class too, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it definitely, I think, can only be helpful when we're all working in support of each other instead of trying to, like, one-up or, like, pull in and that's my student and come to my studio. And as an independent contractor, that's hard to navigate. I guess that's one thing that I particularly, like, I struggle with, like, standing up for my worth and speaking up for myself in terms of, like, working here. Yes, I work here, but I also work here, and, like, navigating, like, how not to feel like guilty or like, oh gosh, I can't work at these two places because they're too close to each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's really hard to navigate. And depending on where you're working, you know, some people are supportive of that and some people aren't. So you can, you know, like I've been in situations where I've gotten caught up in feeling guilty or, you know, I haven't done something that I've actually really wanted to do because I felt like I couldn't. And that kind of sucks.
Yeah, I think it can be really difficult. I mean, especially the whole idea, you know, people talk about like the commercialization of yoga and they look at it usually from the user end standpoint. You know, yoga is becoming commercial. It costs a lot of money to go to classes. Like the stuff, you know, that you buy to go with yoga costs money. The clothes, the mats, all the props, all that stuff is expensive and people are making a lot of money. I mean, last year, in the United States, yoga was an over $5 billion industry. I mean, there's a lot of money that's being made off of yoga in the United States. But I think from, like, a teacher standpoint, there's ways for even though we are independent contractors, and I don't know that that should necessarily change, but I do mm-hmm. think that there's different ways that studio owners could have better businesses if they treated their teachers in a different way and were more I think respectful and more friendly to the idea of teaching. When I was looking at opening my own studio, I dreamed of a place where people were going to be paid a living wage, not based on how many people came to their classes, but the fact that they came to teach. And so whether mm-hmm. there was one person or 25 people, they would make a living wage and they wouldn't have to worry about, well, I only had two people tonight, so now I'm going to make, you know, $10 for this class.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a lots of different ways that studio owners could come together with teachers and we could be more creative about the pay scale, advertising, all that jazz. And I also mm-hmm. think that some of it is regional based on where we live. You know, in other parts of the country, it might be a little bit different. But most people pick yoga studios because of where it's located in relationship to their work and to their home. So mm-hmm. a lot of people sample more than one studio. When I worked at Vision in Ohio City, there was quite a few people, like when I would be logging people in, I would notice that they had addresses in like the east side of Cleveland or the eastern suburbs, but they worked downtown. And so after work, they could easily come to a yoga class in the evening. And then on the weekends, they would go to yoga studios that were close to their homes. So yeah. I think that, you know, geographics plays a huge role in like where people go and what they're doing and how they're doing it. And but I just was looking up while we were talking, as we were talking about how many people do this, right? So they did a study, the National Institute of Health, which I will say, you know, for people out there who are into research and who are kind of into numbers, luckily the National Institute of Health and the CDC and NIM have all been taking a lot more time at looking at yoga and actually funding grants and research so that yoga can be more integrated, which I think is amazing because that's definitely what we need to do. And they did a national health interview survey, and this one is from, I believe this one is from 2012, or let's see. These statistics are just from 2015, actually. And they found that in the United States, 9.5% of U.S. adults have used yoga for mindfulness and body practices. That's 21 million people in the United States.
That's crazy.
That's a lot of people. And yoga actually is more popular. It's the top of the list. Chiropractic or osteopathic manipulation is next, meditation, and then massage therapy. So more adults are using yoga than any of the other alternative ways to deal with pain and strength flexibility. It also goes on to say that 3.1% of all U.S. children use yoga for mindfulness and body work. So that's 1.7 million children in the United States are using yoga for stress relief, physical fitness, strength, and flexibility. There are way more than enough people to go around.
Right. Exactly.
If anyone is worried, 3% of U.S. children, we have the potential to grow that to, you know, 87% of children. Then we could get 100% of children that are exposed to yoga and using it. So I think that, yes, it's a huge industry and it's a big business, but there's still so many more people who are not doing it or exposed to it.
Right.
And that should be our job, you know. Like, I see my job as a yoga teacher and a Reiki master to be an ambassador of the things that I love. And I love these tools. And so, therefore, I talk about it all the time. I feel like that's all I talk about when people ask me. You know, they'll say things like, so what do you do for a living? And I'll be like, oh, I'm a yoga teacher and a Reiki master and a life coach. And they're like, oh, really? I've always wanted to try it. Really? Let me tell you about it. Where do you live? I'll tell you a studio you should go try, you know?
Right. That's amazing, though, like being able to say, like, hey, check out the studio and the studio, and this is a really great teacher. I mean, I think we should all be in the habit of supporting each other in that way. You know, it's not all about, like, me, because it's just not going to work that way.
Right. I mean, I also feel like I, you know, I'm getting to this place in my career where I'm really busy, and, you know, I can see, like, within the next 6 to 12 months, there's going to be a shift in how I'm going to be serving people. You know, I'm going to have to choose between being available for private sessions, and which I already have that struggle now because I teach in the evenings and on the weekends at studios, and I know that that's prime for people who work. So I struggle with the availability of my time to help people, and I have to figure out the best way to serve, you know, the people who need my help. But that's why it's important to grow your network of teachers so that you can say, you know what, I would love to be able to help you, but I actually know somebody who probably would be better at that because of her skill set or his skill set, and so I'm going to give you their information and let me know how that goes. Or I don't have time to help you, and this other person is in your area, so please, you know, I'm going to give this to you and check them out, and I'll connect you on Facebook or via email or something so that you have their contact.
Yeah. So I'm going to – so this just, like, made me think of this in my head. So if anyone teaches kids yoga or is interested in teaching kids yoga – I would highly, highly, highly recommend there's a National Kids Yoga Conference in Washington, D.C. There's been two now. So I went to the one last year, and this one is in, I think it's the end of September or the beginning of October. But it's a two-day conference, and it's so just goes along with what we've been talking about. So it's just a collective of kind of leaders in kids yoga. And really the whole goal is to pull everyone together that's teaching kids yoga to talk about, like, how do we teach this ethically and in collaboration with each other so that we're all teaching, like, of course, not the same things, but that we're all teaching kind of in a similar way so that, one, like, we're teaching safely, and, two, we're teaching in a way that makes kids yoga and yoga, like, a reputable, what's the word I'm looking for? Not reputable, but...
Like, consistent?
Help me, not consistent. like a real, authentic way to help heal the kids that, you know, need healing in our country, which is every kid, I think. But it's just a huge collective of people who all have the same goal, that we're all working together to bring, to raise that 3% or whatever it was, higher, because, like, we know the benefits of how powerful it is in helping kids function and helping adults function. So that's my little shout out. If you have any interest in teaching kids yoga, I would highly recommend it. It was awesome. And there were some really, really wonderful speakers and teachers and practitioners to learn from and just kind of bond with. It was a really great experience.
That's awesome. I think it is so important. Like, I have taught kids yoga classes and I enjoy it. It's definitely not my, you know, number one passion. I really enjoy doing it, and I think it's great. There's other things that I have focused my training on instead of kids yoga, but I remember one time, and I don't even remember who this was, but I saw on Facebook one of my friends who evidently does breathing exercises with their children. For stress management, was freaking out and was having a rough day. And their three-year-old said, Mama, it's okay. Let's just breathe together. It's that whole thing that, like, you know, we – it's so cliche, but the children really are our future. Like, they are the ones who we are leaving this planet to. And don't we want them to be able to function in a different way than we do? Don't we want them to have different tools? And don't we want them to have different relationships and perspectives and experiences in this world, better ones than we did? And, you know, giving this gift to them so that they have tools to communicate, a vocabulary, a toolbox to work off of, it literally will change our world.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a panel of, they were teenagers, but a panel of speakers at the conference that were from, I think, Brooklyn, New York, that had been participating in a school-based yoga program in their town. And to hear it come from their mouths directly about how yoga and mindfulness had impacted their lives. I mean, like, there was one boy talking about just, like, his, like, commute to school every morning. Like, he had to take, like, two or three different, like, subway routes or whatever. I don't know, like, what the lingo is for, like, taking, like, the subway or the bus to get to, like, from one stop to the other. It was, like, an hour and a half commute, and he was talking about, like, how he would use his breathing, like, on his way to school, because by the time he'd gotten to school, he'd already been awake for, like, 3 hours or something, because he was, like, feeding his brothers and sisters in that commute. So just to hear them talk about, like, how specifically and practically it had impacted their lives was really cool. And, yeah, I'm like, imagine if every student in every school had that.
Yeah, I think it can be amazing. I worked with the kids class that I used to teach. I taught it every Sunday in Cleveland Heights, and I had mostly boys, actually, in that class. There was a couple girls, but it was the majority of the class was boys. And the thing that I found the most, and this is what I tell parents all the time, because they would, in disbelief, you know, when I would suggest yoga, my kid will never do that. They don't sit still. I had a 45-minute class, and for the last 15 minutes of class, the kids were quiet. And the parents would say to me, they literally, there was no sound coming out of that room for 15 minutes. How did you do that? And I would always say, like, it's not me, it's the power of yoga. We would do some breathing work at the beginning, and then right before Shavasana, they would have a meditation that they would do. And we would take some time before our meditation to breathe and recenter. And then we would do our meditation. And then they would have 10 minutes, just like an adult, of Shavasana, where they would be allowed to sit or lay, and I would dim the lights and play soft music, and they would just hang out. And, you know, what I found, especially with boys, was that when you take away the expectation of how they think that you think they should behave, they're normal. They don't, you know, they're like a normal human being. And I think about a lot of times with boys, like, it's this level of performance. They are expected to be bad, and they're expected to be rambunctious, and they're expected to run around. And when you give them options, they generally choose to just chill out and be normal, you know? Like, they don't, they're not these crazy little beings that are just completely unruly. And they would tell me, sometimes I wanted to hit my brother in the face yesterday, but instead I closed my eyes and I took a few deep breaths, and then I didn't want to hit him in the face anymore. Like, well, that's awesome. You know, I'm glad that you can do that. So
yeah. And then too, I think it's, again, like, back to, like, just educating, like, kid yoga is so different in many ways than adult yoga. So letting parents know that it doesn't mean that we expect them to sit still for an hour. Like that,
right.
You know, like, we're going to move, and we're going to use our muscles, and we're going to breathe, and we're going to get our heart rate up, and then they are going to relax and practice calming and quieting, and yeah, they don't have to just come in and sit still for the whole time.
Right.
Because no kid can do that for an hour, you know, that isn't typical.
No, and I think that that's the thing. Like, I don't think people, know, especially parents, understand all of the physicality to yoga and how it does help kids. And I think when you're able to, like, kind of get that information out there in a way that's easily understandable, you know, it helps with balance, it helps with core strength, it helps with, you know, increasing their vestibular balance system, and it gives them opportunities to become stronger. One of the things that I just completed a white paper study for Amazing You, which is a branch of, I guess it's not a branch, it's independent, but it goes along with the founder.
It's a company, right, of Zenworks?
Zenworks, yeah. One of the things that I found that I never really realized, because I don't have young children and I am not a school teacher, is that young kids today are complaining a lot about low back pain, and it's because they have no core strength, because they sit all day long. And they are not given opportunities for play throughout their day that helps them build strong cores so that they can support their spine in an appropriate way. And I think that it's really interesting that you are hearing about 6, 7, you know, 10 and 11 year olds saying, my back hurts. And it's because they are stuck in a building all day, you know, being taught all this information. And they actually have done all these studies, especially with the influence of, or the impact, I guess, of No Child Left Behind. The reduction of physical time in school is increased. You know, sitting at your desk has increased. And a lot of school programs have had to cut playground time and gym class because they need to spend more time dealing with issues for testing. So I think that any ways that we can increase kids' movement is going to be helpful for them, especially down the road.
Yeah, that's like a whole another 2-hour conversation.
Yes.
Like I get like immediately infuriated when I think about that, like how it, it's like you're taking away the things that are making the difference. Because of testing and, whole other conversation, but I totally agree. I mean, even my son's in first grade, and he has more work and less play and less physical exercise and less outside time, and it, like, just as a parent, it feels really, like, almost, like, disempowering. Like, there's really not much that we can do, to change that, which really, really, really sucks, because he's 6, and I would much rather him be playing and moving and exercising and getting outside than, you know, sitting at his desk and doing, like, 6 hours of work, which is kind of what they do.
Yeah.
But anyway, whole nother topic.
It is. But I don't want to keep you too long, because I try to keep these limited so that people, know, can live their lives. But thank you again so much. I don't know if there's anything else that you wanted to add before we go. Did we touch on all of your love for yoga, or did you have anything else?
No. The only other thing that I was going to add is that on May 15th, I will be teaching at Partners to Empowerment the CLE Fit class. So it's May 15th at 9 a.m. at Partners to Empowerment. I believe it's a $10 drop-in. It's sponsored by Door-to-Door Organics. So I think there's going to be some possibly, like, a drawing for, like, a giveaway for Door-to-Door Organics. I could be wrong about that, actually. But I think so. But so it's just one of the stops on the CLE Fit 52 weeks of fitness tour. So
awesome.
It should be fun.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you being here and sharing and just being so open and honest about, you know, your life and how you see yoga. And, again, Megan's details will be in the comment section so that you can find find her. She's offered her email address and her personal Facebook page, so feel free to friend her or send her an email and just let her know that you enjoyed the podcast. Or if you have any questions or just wanted to kind of share your story or get some advice, find out where she teaches, etc. As always, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to this. And thank you for being open to the possibilities
of
yoga.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.